All right, good morning, everyone. This is Santa Clara County Supervisor Joe Simidian, and I want to welcome you to the second of a series of telephone town halls we're having in connection with COVID-19 and the county and community response. Again, this is Santa Clara County Supervisor Joe Simidian welcoming you to the call. I represent the 5th District here in Santa Clara County, and the 5th District includes the communities of Palo Alto, Stanford, Mountain View, Los Altos Hills, Cupertino, Saratoga, as well as portions of Sunnyvale and San Jose. Some of you I know from my work previously for more than a decade in the California State Legislature, and perhaps most relevant to today's conversation, in my current role as County Supervisor, I serve as Chair of our Board of Supervisors Health and Hospital Committee here in Santa Clara County. Joining us today, we have a really very knowledgeable panel to help share some information and take your questions. In a moment or two, you'll hear from Dr. Jeff Smith, who is our CEO. He's our county executive. Dr. Smith performs his duties with a somewhat unusual, if not unique, background. He is both a doctor and a lawyer, and has also served as an elected official himself back in the day. He received his MD, medical degree from the University of Southern California School of Medicine, and later served as the Chief Medical Officer and Family Practice Residency Director in the Contra Costa County Health Services. He received his law degree, his Juris Doctor degree, from the University of California at Berkeley. And as I said earlier in his life and career, he was both a council member in the city of Martinez, as well as a member of the Contra Costa County Board of Supervisors. Today, he is our county executive here at Santa Clara County, and it is immensely helpful, of course, to have someone who has both a legal and a medical perspective as we work our way through these COVID challenges. Also with us today is Ms. Greta Hansen. Ms. Hansen is our Chief Assistant County Counsel. Essentially, that means she is the second in command in our county counsel's office. That's our legal division here at the County of Santa Clara, where there are more than 200 folks. And she also, in that role, oversees what we call our social justice and impact litigation team. She got her undergraduate degree from Brown University, law degree also from University of California at Berkeley. And we are delighted to have her here for all of those reasons, but also because she is a regular in what we call our EOC, our Emergency Operations Center, and can share some information about the work that's being done there. And then finally, we have Paul Lorenz. Paul Lorenz is the CEO of our Santa Clara Valley Medical Center. He is the CEO of our hospital system. We have not just the main campus in San Jose, but the recently acquired St. Louis and O'Connor hospitals as well, probably a dozen health centers for which he's also responsible. And before he came to the county some years back, he had served as the chief deputy director for the Ventura County Healthcare Agency, overseeing their Ventura County Medical Center. So we have folks with us today who can give you both a medical take as well as a legal take. And I say thank you to all three of them for their participation in the call today. As I mentioned earlier, the purpose of the call today is to discuss the impact of COVID-19 on our county, share a little bit about the county's response so far, and obviously talk a little bit about what you can do to keep yourself and your friends, your neighbors, your colleagues healthy. For those who couldn't make it this morning, and there is no perfect time, I've discovered that as we try to schedule these things, the call will be recorded. And anyone unable to listen this morning, please feel free to tell them that the call will be online on my County Supervisor Joe Simidian webpage, and it'll be easy to access there. It should be up in a day or two at the most, but we do record the call. Listeners can ask questions after we hear from the three speakers, each of whom I'll ask a couple of questions. But after we've heard from those three speakers, I will go to you for your questions, and if at any time you think of a question you'd like to ask, you can do so simply by pressing 9. And again, you can do that at any time during the call. Just press 9 to ask a question, and one of our question screeners will take your call and we'll put you in the queue if we possibly can. I know from the volume we had the last time, we won't be able to get to all of your questions today, but we will try and get to as many as possible. So there's the format. I will go to each of our speakers in turn, ask them a couple of questions to start off the conversation, give people time to put their own questions in the queue. And again, to do that, you simply press 9 at any time. And if there are unresolved issues that you'd like to pursue after today's call, remember you can find answers to a lot of these questions on the Santa Clara County Public Health Department's website and Facebook page, as well as my own County Supervisor Joe Simidian website. And I've got a Facebook page, of course, out there as well. So let's get started with Dr. Jeff Smith, mindful of the fact that if a question occurs to you, again, just press 9. This is County Supervisor Joe Simidian welcoming you all to the call and saying thank you once again. Dr. Smith, thank you for being with us this morning. I think the question I get most often, calls, emails, is sort of what can we expect in terms of the immediate future? When will life get back to normal or as close to normal as things can be? What's the timeline for allowing folks to go back to work, travel a bit, see friends and family in their homes? And I know there, you know, is no clear answer today, but with the current orders set to expire next week, what can folks expect? Going to you, Dr. Smith. And if we have a technical problem, then I'm going to turn and offer that question to Greta Hansen. Greta Hansen, can you help us with that one?
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, this is a question that we are constantly asking ourselves in the Emergency Operations Center. I know it's very top of mind for Dr. Sarah Cody, our health officer, every day. As she's shared with the public and is also shares with the team here in the Emergency Operations Center, we still have a ways to go. We have made tremendous progress as a community. She's been extremely gratified by the tremendous compliance that she's seen with the shelter-in-place orders here, including the very early placement of shelter-in-place, which, as folks have seen, has really radically changed for the better what has been happening in our community with respect to COVID-19. But, of course, any lessening of those restrictions, which she is thinking about and planning for every single day, also carries with it tremendous risk that we can backslide on some of the tremendous progress we've made in containing the virus. And so, as she's conveyed, we really are in this for the long haul, and folks definitely need to be continually vigilant about reducing the number of contacts they're having, making sure that they are only going out into the community to do those things that are essential and that they carefully follow the developments that will be announced as we enter next phases where there are opportunities to begin increasing the volume of activity in the community while also ensuring that we aren't suddenly amplifying spread of COVID-19.
Sorry, I cut out. Doctor, why don't you speak to that question too, please, sir?
Dr. Smith, can you hear me now? This is County Supervisor Joe Simidian.
I'm sorry. Somehow I cut out, but now I'm back.
All right. Well, let's hope that we still have most of our listeners, and somehow I cut out as well. So, as I say, we're trying new technologies, and sometimes they present a challenge. Let me just double-check and make sure that we still have Ms. Greta Hansen on the line from our County Council's office. Ms. Hansen, are you still with us?
I am.
Thank you. And how about Paul Lorenz from our hospital system. Mr. Lorenz, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. And just a little bit louder when we come to you, Mr. Lorenz, if you could, please. But meantime, let's go back to Jeff Smith. And Dr. Smith, our county exec, I was asking a little bit about when things might go back to normal, what the schedule will look like, and what folks should expect in the days ahead. And again, with apologies to folks on the line, of whom there are many, by the way, for the technical challenge. What can you share with us about the path back, so to speak?
Well, thank you, Supervisor. The path back is going to be a very challenging one because this literally is a pandemic that we've never seen the likes of in the history of the world. We've never had a situation where we have this type of virus spreading in a very stealth manner in a very populated world with very much communicability. And so we're basically stuck in this situation with only one way to treat the pandemic, and that is social distancing. We have no vaccine yet. We have no specific medical treatment. So the public health officers are going to do what's called a staged return, meaning they will look at low-risk activities and begin to permit very low-risk activities and measure what effect that has on the so-called curve. The very good effect that so far has happened with the curve is that we've flattened it. We've had much fewer cases than we expected to have because the public's been so very good with the shelter in place, and we don't want to lose that advantage that we have now. So I expect that the new order will probably come into place soon, maybe next week. It'll be a little different than the last one, but we're very concerned about new spikes. Every pandemic in the history of the world has had two or three spikes, and we are concerned that there will be one in either the late summer or early fall. So we want to make sure that we are prepared for that.
And this is County Supervisor Joe Simidian again with Dr. Jeff Smith. Dr. Smith, we have an order in place right now that comes to an end, as I recall, this Sunday, May the 3rd. Does that mean we can expect a new order will be released between now and May 3rd?
Yes, I am quite confident there'll be a new order. There will not, I'm sure, be a dramatic change in the shelter in place because it is the only tool we have to prevent the spikes, but there will probably be some relatively minor changes to the situation in order to free up this society a little bit, because obviously the public health officers are quite concerned about the effects of shelter in place on the economy and the mental health and physical health of the community.
And do we have a date certain for that announcement, or just obviously sometime between now and May the 3rd?
My understanding at this point is the seven public health officers are putting the final touches on the agreement and will not release it until they all have agreement as to exact details. So we don't really have a final date, but it should be next week, I would imagine the middle of the week.
All right. Thank you for that. And a good reminder that it's not just a question of our public health officer, Dr. Sarah Cody, trying to exercise her best judgment, but part of the effort and the challenge is to coordinate with half a dozen other public health officers in counties around the Bay Area to come up with an order that is relatively uniform and consistent between and among the counties so that it's easy to implement around the Bay Area. Let me just ask another question. I know a lot of folks have expressed concern. There's been news coverage about the fact that congregate settings, as they are sometimes referred to, nursing homes, as folks refer to them colloquially, sometimes skilled nursing facilities, sometimes assisted living communities, have struggled particularly with the challenges of COVID. Can you tell us both a little bit about what the problem or circumstance is in those settings and what we're doing to address it? How are we protecting folks who are among our most vulnerable populations, Dr. Smith?
Right, Supervisor. The key word is congregate settings, I think. Anytime there are a lot of people together, there's the potential for many contacts, and this virus spreads very rapidly. So in a congregate setting, it's pretty hard to isolate people on a daily basis and actually comply with social distancing. So it makes it a very high-risk environment. Once the virus is introduced, either from a visitor or from a staff member, it tends to spread quite rapidly. And we've noticed in our county a significant problem with long-term care facilities. We've posted online some statistics related to those problems, and the state has additional statistics posted online, which you can get to from a link on our page. However, what we've done is we've created basically a strike team of doctors, nurses, administrators to keep close tabs on what's going on in individual nursing homes and try to address problems as they come up, problems like supply of personal protective equipment, strategies for separation, even nursing. We were for a while sending some of our nurses to nursing homes in order to substitute for those employees at the nursing homes who were either out on quarantine or not able to come to work. We also were able to bring down nurses from the state so that we could finally move our nurses to a different location where they're needed. But it's a constant effort to try to make sure that we are on top of it. And obviously, we're working with private corporations and owners, and so we have to be consistent with that. The other major congregate area is the homeless, which poses a significant problem because people have real troubles being socially distant and they don't have the support they need for other services. So we have a team going into homeless encampments, identifying people who are at risk or who have coronavirus or who have been exposed to coronavirus. And at this point, everyone that we've identified who has corona, we've been able to move to another location, typically a motel room with support so that they don't infect others. And we're looking for more housing for our general population of homeless individuals.
Thank you. I want to go back just before we go on to the next question. I want to go back to the issue of our folks who are in nursing homes or assisted living facilities. Obviously, the concern there is that folks not bring the virus into those close quarters. Are we in the process? Have we been able to set up some kind of a system to test folks who are staff members there to make sure that they're not bringing the virus into those settings where it could spread quickly?
Yes, I should have mentioned that. We do have targeted testing in the nursing homes. So
all
that
right,
we
thank
can
you.
Make sure that people don't go in there that are positive.
Thank you very much. And let me just ask one more question before we move on to Greta Hansen from our county council's office. And that would be, you know, as you have worked through this issue, Dr. Smith, what's your take on the level of cooperation we're getting from both the state and federal governments at this point?
Well, I think the state has been cooperative, and we are all concerned that from a national perspective, there was a slow approach to this pandemic that we should have gotten started a few months beforehand, working on testing and supplies for hospitals and appropriate social distancing. Because we didn't get tests from the CDC until the first part of February, and it turned out that those tests were defective. And so we've been relying upon the private sector to develop and manufacture their own tests. And we, at this point, have more than half a dozen different kinds of tests. The county public health lab is dependent upon the CDC test because we can't manufacture our own tests, but we have other private companies who are manufacturing and doing testing, but we don't have anywhere near the number of test capacity that we need.
Well, before I go on to Greta Hansen, let me just ask, what are our prospects for picking up the pace somehow on testing? Are we really at the whims of either the private sector and or the federal government? We, you know, this is a conversation that's been underway now for probably two months across the nation, Dr. Smith.
Well, in California, we have the state pushing out a testing plan. As the governor said at his last or second to last update, they have done a deal with Quest Labs, and they will be setting up numerous sites in the state, planning on trying to do 60,000 tests a day, which is a huge help, and we will have sites in our county. Once we find out where they are, we'll let people know. We currently have Verily, which is a subsidiary of Alphabet, which is a sister company of Google, doing tests in San Mateo and Santa Clara. We also have the University of Stanford doing tests, and we have been doing tests ourselves through our healthcare delivery system as well as through our public health system. All of these tests tend to be different manufacturers, and there are questions about the sensitivity and specificity of the different tests, but so far we've done about 23,000 tests. We've got about, I think it's 1,200 positives at this point. And so we're looking at accelerating, but it has been a real challenge nationwide, much because the equipment, reagents, swabs, and actual test kits have been in short supply.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Jeff Smith, County Executive, Santa Clara County. Once again, for those of you on the line, I'm County Supervisor Joe Simitti, and apologies for the technical difficulties a little bit earlier. We want to see if we can get your thinking, though, on a poll question as we make our way through the conversation this morning. I'm going to share the question with you, and not to worry, I won't I won't just do it once. I'll go back and go through the choices a second time. But trying to assess the concerns that people have and are most focused on right now as we go through this challenging time, I'm going to list four items and ask you to pick one that is the matter of greatest concern to you. Not a scientific poll, but you know we have thousands of folks who've called in this morning, and we should be able to get a good large response. And again, acknowledging that there are other issues of concern, I would ask you to press 1 if you are most concerned about folks who are elderly and or at-risk relatives and friends. Press 2 if you are most concerned about hospitals and medical staff's ability to respond to the outbreak, to keep up without being overwhelmed, essentially. Press 3 if you're most concerned about the loss of jobs and the effect this is having on our economy and our small businesses in particular. And press 4 if you are most concerned about the ability of students out there to receive an adequate education while schools and universities are either being closed or pursuing distance learning. So again, if you're most concerned about at-risk friends and relatives and the elderly, please press 1. If you are most concerned about the ability of our hospitals and medical staffs to keep up with and respond to this outbreak, please press 2. If you are most concerned about the impact of the outbreak on our economy and small businesses and job loss, please press 3. And if you're most concerned about the impact on education, both schools and universities that have either closed or are pursuing distance learning, please press 4. So thank you for that. And now we're going to turn to Greta Hansen, who, as I introduced earlier, is the number 2, the second in command in our county council's office, but perhaps even equally important, certainly for this call, is a regular participant and key player at our Emergency Operations Center, our EOC. So let me say good morning and thank you to Greta Hansen. And Ms. Hansen, why don't you tell folks, just as a starting point, what is an EOC? What's an Emergency Operations Center, and what happens there every day to protect Santa Clara County residents?
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. I'd be happy to talk about that. An Emergency Operations Center is something that operates in every county across our state, and it's part of a national organized infrastructure for emergency response. And counties during any disaster, certainly this one included, are the level of government that coordinates all local response activities and also serves as the link to state and federal resources when we need to turn to the state and federal government to obtain resources or support that we're not able to develop and effectuate locally. The county's Emergency Operations Center is a large facility that stands at the ready for any disaster that may occur, whether that's an earthquake, a weather event, or in this case, a pandemic event. And it's something that we constantly are, throughout the year, conducting simulations to ensure that we're prepared to rapidly respond to and coordinate disasters of this type. In the Emergency Operations Center, we operate under standard protocols that are common amongst jurisdictions. So if, for example, there's a need to rely on mutual aid from the state, the federal government, or another jurisdiction, the infrastructure is in place to have that work as seamlessly as it can. For this event, our Emergency Operations Center has been operating 7 days a week, coordinating the COVID-19 response for our region for the last several months, and we are doing many different things every day in the EOC, including coordinating efforts across our entire healthcare system and specifically every acute care hospital in the county, all the skilled nursing facilities, all the fire and law enforcement agencies, really every governmental agency, and also many swaths of the private sector that are engaged in emergency response. To give
Ms. Hansen, let me interrupt for just a moment. Let me just interrupt for a moment and ask you to paint a picture for us. If somebody walked through the door, what would they see? How many folks are there? And at any given moment, are they on the phone? Are they monitoring information online? Try and paint a picture for us, because, as I say, this is something most of our listeners will never have had any experience with, never have seen. So how would you describe that scene when you walk through the doors on a daily basis?
I'd love to. So you come into our facility, you will see walls of large monitors where detailed information and statistics about how the trajectory of the epidemic locally is playing out are displayed everywhere. We have a team that is, for example, focused solely on procuring PPE for our healthcare, first responders, and others who need PPE. They've been able to obtain about 17 million pieces of PPE over the course of this event and have those being distributed to our high priority utilizers of personal protective equipment, most specifically our acute care hospitals throughout the county. You would also see a team of public health staff doing extensive and ever-expanding case and contact investigations, tracking down known cases and persons who may have been exposed to those cases, trying to really ramp up that infrastructure, which will be critical to the next phase of the response. And you'd also see another team of folks who are aggressively putting in place additional housing measures for homeless individuals, other individuals who may live in crowded housing, who may need to be isolated and better housed for their protection and the protection of the community. It's a very large group of more than 100 folks, day in, day out, 7 days a week, doing every aspect of regional coordination.
Thank you. That really is helpful. I think it does, as I had hoped it would, paint a picture. Let me move to a different question, Greta Hansen from our County Council's office. I referenced this earlier in the call because it's an unusual situation for those of us who are elected officials. And I've had the challenge of explaining this to individual constituents. The judgment calls that get made during this process are made by our county's public health officer, and they are not made by the elected officials, the Board of Supervisors as a group, or even an individual supervisor. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
And that's pursuant to state law on the subject, yes?
That's exactly right.
And if it seems like I'm trying to lead you here, Ms. Hansen, it's because I am, as you can tell. But I think it's a little unusual for folks, and I'm highlighting this because we do get calls in my office from folks who say, well, why don't you just tell the public health officer to do X, Y, or Z? And my understanding is that really the one person who can, quote, overrule the public health officer while this emergency is underway is the state public health officer in some circumstances. Is that also the case?
That's exactly accurate.
So, any other thoughts about how this dynamic works? I mentioned at a previous board meeting that, you know, there's probably a gray area between oversight, which is, of course, the responsibility of the Board of Supervisors, the elected officials, and interference, which we sometimes see at other levels of government and which we don't want to see here. What are your thoughts as a lawyer who has to navigate that process on a day-to-day basis, even minute-to-minute sometimes?
Well, I think all the challenges and complexity that you've named is certainly been my experience as well. This is unusual that you have an expert who's been tasked by the state legislature with being at the helm of this type of critical decision-making, because the decisions she's making each day really rely on her deep expertise in managing communicable disease transmission. And so that those health-related, expert-driven decision-making processes are her focus every single day. Of course, she absolutely does consider the entirety of circumstances that this that some of the actions that she needs to take require her to consider in terms of not just the effects on disease transmission, but how things can be operationalized in the community. And as Dr. Smith mentioned, this is an incredibly challenging pandemic in that at this juncture, the only really effective tool we have in our toolkit is social distancing. Of course, we're rapidly expanding the infrastructure necessary to employ other wide-scale containment and mitigation techniques in conjunction with social distancing. But as you mentioned, this is the structure that we have under state law, where health officers, as the experts in how to respond to this sort of a pandemic event, are the decision makers for purposes of this, and of course are constantly assessing not only the scientific evidence, the other experts in their field who are providing input, but also the input from the community that's also being shared with HER via the many folks in the county, including our elected leaders who are in close communication with HER and others who are working in the county's emergency response.
Got it. Thank you. Before I ask you just one last question, Ms. Hansen, I want to remind all of our listeners that they too can ask questions, and we are getting a queue of questioners lined up, but we still have room for more. So if you'd like to ask a question, simply press 9 at any time. Again, if you're listening to the call and you would like to ask a question of Dr. Jeff Smith, our county executive, or Ms. Greta Hansen from our county council's office, or Paul Lorenz, who's the CEO of our hospital system, please just press 9, and we will try to get to your question once we've wrapped up these initial inquiries. So, Ms. Hansen, one last question. You are the second in command, as we said, in the county council's office, our legal division. I'm sure this will not be the first time somebody has asked, but if someone thinks that the public health order has been applied to them in a way that is either unfair, inaccurate, inconsistent, or thinks that they are a special or unique case, who do they go to make that case? Because, this is we hope, a once-in-a-lifetime phenomenon, and the processes and procedures are a little vague, I think, for folks in a time of great difficulty. So if someone thinks they've got a case to make or that they've been judged unfairly, is there a path that they can take? How do they get their issues addressed?
Thank you for the question. Two things I would say. One is we have on our website, which is sccphd.org/CV19, a set of detailed frequently asked questions that can answer many questions folks have about which businesses are essential, how those determinations are made, and the like. There's also a portal alongside the FAQs where if there's a question, a comment, or a concern that someone wants to raise, they can submit that question through that webpage. And the team of folks who are combing through those inquiries, those comments, and questions are responding to hundreds of those every day, which are incredibly varied in the types of questions and concerns being raised. But there is a team of folks who's combing through those. So that's the best way at present for people to raise those sorts of concerns. And as we try and hone our communications with the public every day, and as we move into next phases, we know there will be more questions in that vein. And so we are actively trying to develop more and better ways for those types of concerns to be vetted and to make sure people know where they can be directed.
So because you gave the web address, which is both a little complicated and relatively quickly, if I were to Google Santa Clara County Public Health Coronavirus, am I going to find myself in the right place?
You will. And if you look for the Frequently Asked Questions page, you can find that place on the web page where you can submit comments, questions, or concerns.
All right. Thanks so much, Greta Hansen, for that perspective as someone who's dealing with both the legal issues and the operational issues on a daily basis in our Emergency Operations Center. Let me now turn to Paul Lorenz. Paul Lorenz, as I introduced
him. Can I interrupt for a second?
Please. Sure. Dr. Jeff Smith, did you want to add a little something there before I go to Paul Lorenz?
This is a good point, I think, to bring up that I was notified I was in error earlier when I said some numbers. I think I misspoke. I should have said we have about 23,000 tests that we've done. A little over 2,000 have been positive. A little around 100 deaths have occurred. And I should also point out that all of that data plus the data about the testing and other data related to NIFs is all on the same page, website page that Greta just talked about. And I just wanted to make sure I corrected that.
And when you say a SNF, for those who don't know the jargon, that is a skilled nursing facility, yes?
Yes, it is.
All right, thank you. Let me go now to Paul Lorenz. Paul Lorenz, as I mentioned earlier, is the head of our hospital system here in Santa Clara County, which now includes three hospitals, but also a dozen various clinics. Mr. Lorenz, good morning, and thank you for being on the program with us today. Can you hear us loud and clear?
Good morning, and thank you, Supervisor, for giving me the opportunity to be part of this panel.
Well, thank you. Mr. Lawrence, let me start with a question. And again, this is a question I get a lot from constituents. I was really quite impressed with how quickly people in the community grasped the fact that we had a real concern going into the crisis that if things got out of hand in terms of numbers, we would not have the capacity in our hospital and our healthcare system to meet the demand, given the fact that there are just a limited number of beds, a limited number of ICUs, intensive care units, a limited number of ventilators, a limited number of staff, doctors, nurses, and other professionals who we need. And so that was the reason it was so important to flatten the curve, to make sure that we kept the numbers low and slow, so that the system was not overwhelmed. Has that happened? Have we been successful in that effort? And what does that look like going forward in your assessment?
Well, thank you, Supervisor. First of all, the overwhelming consensus amongst the hospital community in Santa Clara County is that the shelter-in-place, the social distancing measures, the measures that this county took early on made a huge difference in our ability to not only prepare the hospitals, but also to provide for what we believe to be very critical care to individuals that do present with COVID-19 into the healthcare setting. So I think we as a county have been very fortunate relative to our ability as a hospital system to be where we're at today. Now, none of us really know where this is all going to head, and that is why I think it's very prudent, as the health officer has stated, that we continue to be very careful of how we adjust our shelter-in-place policies, public policies. I would also share with the public that today, throughout this county, we only have about 165 patients that are COVID positive in the acute care setting. And we would not be speaking those numbers today if it weren't for the measures that the public health officer and the board has taken over the past several weeks.
So thank you, Mr. Lorenz. I think we could all use some good news here. It sounds to me like the good news is that as daunting as the challenge has been, we have not had a capacity problem. While there have been shortages of certain PPE, the personal protective equipment that we've talked about, in terms of the number of beds and intensive care units and ventilators, so far in our county system, at least we've been able to meet the extent of the challenge. Yes?
We have. And just to share a few numbers with the public and the callers, is that right now we're running about 60% of our typical acute care bed capacity. So we still have around 40% of our acute care beds available in the three hospital system. In addition to that, in our surge planning efforts, which is actually coordinated, as mentioned earlier, with the County Emergency Operations Center. So all of the hospitals individually have their own surge plans. With the three hospitals, we were able to add 344 additional beds should we need them, 200 of which would be at the ICU level capacity and be ventilator capable. So as a health
and that's
system,
just within our county system, Mr. Lorenz, excuse the interruption, but just for folks who are not familiar with the distinction between our three hospital county system, that's just within our own county system. You're talking about that surge capacity or ability to grow our numbers, yes?
That is correct. That is just within the three hospitals. And there, of course, have been a lot of discussions around both ventilator capacity and as well as PPE. Fortunately, given the time we've been given, we've been able to, just for the three hospitals, have another 240 ventilators available for our system. Countywide, I can share that there are probably now in the range of about 800-plus ventilators that are available throughout all of the hospitals throughout Santa Clara County, and not just our three hospitals. So that gives you some sense that the time that we've had, we've been able to improve our facility infrastructure and equipment availability. The personal protective equipment that there's also been a lot of discussion about for the hospitals, we've made significant grounds, not just individually as hospitals, but also working closely with the county EOC. I think the leveraging of all of our resources and capability has really benefited the entire community of Santa Clara County.
Got it. And I interrupted you, and I apologize for that, but I did think it was important that you were about to share. Our three hospitals are just part of the network of hospitals up and down the county. How are the other hospitals doing in terms of their ability to meet demand and to feel confident that if that demand unfortunately grew, they'd be in a position to respond?
So, Supervisor, I would share with the public that we've always had a very close community of hospitals in Santa Clara County, from Stanford to the Kaiser hospitals to the HCA hospitals. We've always worked well together. And during this COVID-19 situation, we have come together. The EOC brought together what they call the hospital surge branch. And so we're able to monitor as a county the capacity of each and every hospital and be able to support each other. All the hospitals in the county are pretty much seeing the same numbers we are at within our three-hospital system, where they do have additional capacity relative to acute care beds. And countywide, we probably have, we do have around 100% of our surge capacity available today. What's going on today within the hospitals in this county is the discussion around reopening certain services to the community. Early on, all of the hospitals counseled elective procedures. At this point in time, all of the hospitals are looking to phase back these services, and much to do with the concern that many people have put off these elective surgeries, and we are concerned about making sure that we maintain good health within the community and provide what we consider to be essential healthcare services. So that is happening today. Much to do around the fact that we do have the capacity, and frankly, we were successful in flattening the curve, if you will.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Paul Lorenz. Again, Paul is the director of our county hospital system here, a three-hospital system plus 12 clinics out there in the community. We want to go to your questions now, so a reminder that you should simply press 9 at any time if you would like to ask a question. Before we do that, however, I wanted to offer the poll results, and we thank so many of you for participating in the poll. I had asked which of four different concerns was the highest concern for folks responding to the poll, and again, understanding that this is hardly a random sample, because the folks who are on the call are clearly interested in this topic, but interesting, I think, nonetheless. We had probably a third, 33%, who said that their concern about the elderly and at-risk relatives and friends was their greatest concern. We had 27% who said that their concern about our hospitals and our healthcare system being able to sort of keep up and respond to the outbreak was their greatest concern. 32% who felt that the economy was concerned about job loss and small business was their greatest concern. And we had just 8% who said that they were most concerned about students and the ability of those students to get an adequate education while schools and universities were either closed or pursuing distance learning. So again, 33% concerned about at-risk relatives and elderly and friends, 27% about hospital and healthcare capacity, 32% about economic issues, and 8% about education issues. So thank you. Helpful for me to see. And I should also mention that we asked the same question 3 weeks ago and had a different distribution. And at the time, Paul Lorenz, I should mention this to you, at the time, we had twice as many folks who were concerned about hospitals and healthcare systems capacity. And the fact that that number is appreciably less means people are feeling reassured, I think, as you have reassured them today, that the system is keeping up, has the ability to keep up, and that that is in large measure a function of the social distancing steps that people have been taking so diligently. So thank you again for that. We are now going to go to questions. Thank you all for your patience. And again, please press 9 if you are on the line and would like to have a question asked and answered. I'm going to call by first name, and then we will also mention the city that you're from so you can be prepared. Get ready to unmute if you have been muting thus far, because I'm going to go to Dennis in Los Altos Hills. Dennis in Los Altos Hills, who has a question about the curve having already been flattened, and the questions about the necessity for delayed reopening, if you will. Dennis in Los Altos Hills, are you there? Would you like to ask a question?
Yes, sir. Yeah, thank you for taking my question. That was pretty much it. I think we can all see from the data that it's pretty flat, and you know, at this point, I would like to understand what our leaders' thinking is in terms of, you know, it's going to be painful when we reopen. I think everybody understands that, but I just don't understand the rationale right now for any kind of delaying or what your plan is. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Dennis. I'm going to turn that one over to Jeff Smith, Dr. Jeff Smith, who is our county executive, for an initial response. And then Ms. Hansen, Mr. Lorenz, if you would like to jump in, please feel free to do so.
Well, thank you, Dennis. Great question. The basic problem is the risk of the future spikes that we know are coming. The community assessments, both by testing of the virus and testing of antibodies, show that a large portion of the community, probably somewhere in the 90 to 92%, are susceptible to the infection. And we also have a large population, maybe as large as 82,000 individuals in the community who are infected and infectious. But they can't really well be well identified because many of them are asymptomatic. So releasing the social distancing will increase the number of contacts and by definition increase the number of contacts between infected individuals and susceptible individuals, which will cause another spike. We were very effective with social distancing and flattened the curve very well, but we're not a unique and isolated county. There are counties and communities around us, states around us, that don't have as much success or haven't had as much success, and there's lots of travel. So we know that a spike is coming no matter what, but we don't want the spike to be high enough that it'll overwhelm our healthcare system, and obviously we want fewer people infected and dying. So we have to be very careful as we relax in a staged manner.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. We have a question now from, I believe it's Daniel in Mountain View, Daniel in Mountain View about PPE, personal protective equipment. Daniel, we should be able to have you on the line. Could you share your question, please?
Thank you. Hi, County Supervisor. We're hearing that there is still shortages of personal protective equipment and respirators. across the country in hospitals and medical clinics, and now we're worried about nursing homes who have a very high percentage of infection. And I have some good news, and that is that there are a tool in the toolbox that is simple, obvious, but has gone largely unnoticed, and that is the use of reusable air purifying respirators. Probably the best option would be half-face air purifying respirators, and these are made by MSA, 3M, and Honeywell. These are all American manufacturers. They're
and
available
Dennis, your
right.
Question, please. Dennis, your question, please.
Oh, and my question is, sorry about that. My question is, why are we not considering the use of air purifying respirators to supplement the N95 masks? Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate the question and forgive the misattribution of the question. That was Daniel calling from the city of Mountain View. We appreciate the question, Daniel. Let me turn to Paul Lorenz, the CEO of our hospital system. Mr. Lorenz, is that a question you can respond to?
I'll respond in part, then I'll turn it over to maybe Dr. Smith to follow through on the response.
A little louder if you could, please, Mr. Lorenz. We're having trouble hearing
sure.
you.
So what I would say is that right now we have enough N95 healthcare grade types of masks available for our staff. We do have the ability to identify alternative types of masks that could be used in healthcare setting if, in fact, we had to move in that direction. And we evaluate PPE based on a variety of different factors, including ease of use within the healthcare environment, as well as the level of protection that is afforded. So we do evaluate each potential PPE on its own merits from a healthcare perspective. I'm not sure if Dr. Smith has anything further to add to that as well.
Well, the only thing I would add is that we're using multiple types of protection. The shorthand is PPE, but there are medical grade masks and respirators. There are non-medical grade masks and protective equipment. And I don't think there's any likelihood that we would ignore any other options. I'm not familiar with the specific respirator that you're talking about, but I will check into it and make sure that we're using it in where we can. I think that we have multiple needs in multiple communities, multiple businesses. The main problem we're having is numbers, because those needs extend throughout the entire nation.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. Thank you, Mr. Lorenz. I want to go to a question from Bonnie in Palo Alto on a different subject. Bonnie in Palo Alto, are you on the line?
Yes. Yes, I have two questions. One is, I read recently about the use of dogs sniffing to be able to sniff the virus if someone is a carrier. I know they use it in airports all the time, train dogs to sniff drugs and so forth. And I'm wondering why they don't use dogs to, as a, you know, a way of determining whether a person is carrying the virus. That was
all right,
my number
let me go
one
to,
question.
Why don't you go ahead and share your second question with us, and then we'll let you
okay, the second question is just quick. I'm at that point where I would like to order from a restaurant, but how do I know the person preparing the food in the restaurant doesn't have some kind of an undetectable virus?
All right. Thank you so much, Bonnie from Palo Alto. Appreciate both of those questions. Let me start with the first, which is, can dogs sniff out the virus? Let me ask Dr. Smith, Paul Lorenz, either one of you want to weigh in on that one?
Well, interesting, Supervisor. I did also read that. I'm not sure it's at a point now where it's been proven effective in a scientific way, but certainly it should be something that should be looked into. I think it will require some more random testing in order to be actually a method to be used. Plus, usually there's considerable amount of training for these type of dogs, and it's really a small number. But that being said, I'm looking forward to the results of the scientific testing.
Thank you. And the second question, which is one I have to say I get a lot from constituents, is, well, if I order something from a restaurant, how can I be confident that it was prepared in a way that was safe and healthy from a COVID-19 standpoint? Paul Lorenz, Dr. Smith, Greta Hansen, who'd like to just jump right in on that one?
This is Greta. I can say a few words on that. One thing I would note for your caller is that we do have the head of our environmental health agency responsible for regulating sanitation and code compliance here with us in our Emergency Operations Center, working every day on the special issues that this virus presents in the restaurant context. And we do, where there are specific concerns or complaints raised about particular facilities and their ability to ensure that they aren't sources of transmission, have a team that is going out and doing on-site inspections and reviews and providing feedback, and if necessary, taking action to ensure that our restaurants aren't significant sources of spread of the virus in the community. And so that's one partial answer I would offer to your question. The other thing is, the Public Health Department has provided guidance in conjunction with our Environmental Health Department on how restaurants should ensure that they are minimizing the likelihood that anyone in their facility could spread it to coworkers or to any members of the public. So that's an issue that we're actively focused on here in our Emergency Operations Center. And fortunately, we've had good compliance from the restaurant industry in the county and in the places that that we've been looking.
And Ms. Hansen, just to follow up on that for listeners who may not be familiar with our structure here at the county, when you referenced environmental health, those are the regular inspections that our Department of Environmental Health here at Santa Clara County conducts at every food service establishment throughout the entire county on a regular basis, yes?
That's correct.
And so those inspections have already gone by, and then you're indicating that in addition to the inspections that have already occurred, those inspections are continuing, will also respond on a complaint basis, and that there's been special direction provided by the county to procedures that folks should be taking out there in the food service world, the restaurant world, during the course of the virus. Have I got all those? Is that the 1, 2, 3 of it?
Exactly right.
All right. Well, thank you. And the only other thing I would add before I go on to our next questioner for the caller is, if you can pull down the app, we have an app here at Santa Clara County called SCC Dine Out. Again, that's SCC Dine Out. And the reason I mention the app is it will show you on a 0 to 100 score, what the score is of the restaurant that you are about to call or email. And it'll not only give you their most recent score, but it'll give you their history. And if you're really curious, you can look at the inspection reports themselves. So we do have the ability to double check the health and cleanliness history, at least, of literally every restaurant and food service establishment in Santa Clara County, because they've had to go through these inspections up till now. So thank you for that question or pair of questions, Bonnie. Much appreciated. We're going to go now to Brian from Sunnyvale. Brian from Sunnyvale, who has some questions about testing, I believe. Brian, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Thanks
First,
so much for your patience.
No problem. First, I want to thank our local health organization for acting quickly at the start of this pandemic. It really made a big difference. My question is, why didn't we vet and acquire tests from the World Health Organization?
And Brian, is that a we, as in why didn't the county do that, or why didn't the U.S. government, or why didn't the state, or all of the above?
Why didn't the county do this? The feds are not going to help us.
All right. Thank you for the question, Brian from Sunnyvale. Dr. Smith, thoughts about the ability to acquire tests from the World Health Organization?
Great question. The problem here is that our public health department is limited to utilizing the test kits that come from the CDC, and that's legal regulatory requirements. So we can't really go outside the country and acquire tests because they have to be approved by the FDA and CDC. Part of the problem with the early test was that the one that was approved was not functional correctly. And so we and the public health department were stuck. What's happened is that some private companies have contracted with outside or international sources to bring their own tests into the system, and they are supposed to be reporting positive and negative results to us now. But fundamentally, the answer to your question is the FDA and CDC wouldn't let us.
Thank you for that. We have a question from Ash Patel. Ash Patel in Sunnyvale, and apparently it's school-related. Let me see if Ash Patel is still on the line.
Yes, hi, I'm there. Thanks for taking my question.
Of course.
So my question is how the elected officials as well as the public health officials are working with school districts in terms of communicating, you know, when you are lacking the standards, so how they are working with public school district officials. So that's my main question. And the reason why I'm asking this question is I have a concern because I'm hearing that eventually by, you know, next month or middle of next month, we are talking about relaxing the standards on shelter in place. However, the school systems are, you know, already, they have declared that they're not going to start so this school year. But then, of course, you have a summer program and then you have a next school year. So I'm trying to get some visibility into how this is all working out, as well as, you know, I'm concerned about the impact on the school system and education. So that's why my question.
Thank you so much for the question. I'm going to go to Dr. Smith and Greta Hansen on this for just in just a moment. But a reminder to all of our listeners that before we get the response, we do have more than 30 different K through 12, kindergarten through 12th grade school districts here in Santa Clara County, plus our community college districts, of course, plus our state and private universities. But those more than 30 K through 12 school districts, each and every one of them is an independent governmental entity unto itself. Now, many times they're able to work through our County Office of Education. But Dr. Smith, if you could start and or we can go to Greta Hansen to just say a little bit about how do we coordinate and cooperate and who gets to make what decisions when it comes to our schools, school closures, and how they proceed. Dr. Jeff Smith?
This is Greta. I can go ahead and
right, please. Greta will do it.
Great. All right. Greta, it sounds to me like Dr. Smith thought if he waited long enough, you'd pick up this question for it. So go to it.
Happy to. So a couple things I would highlight in response to your excellent question. First, the Emergency Operations Center is working in close partnership with the County Office of Ed, who is through our superintendent of schools for the county, coordinating across all school districts in the county related to this event. We have a representative of the County Office of Education here embedded with us in the Emergency Operations Center to ensure that schools are closely tracking and coordinating on an array of activities with our overall emergency response. With respect to schools and a potential lessening of the shelter-in-place order in the weeks and months to come, it is absolutely correct that schools have made announcements that they have no near-term intention or ability to reopen. The state of California has also made statements similar to that, and the state works directly with each local school district around the state very closely, and also serves as a regulatory entity over those school districts, and also provides them with funding. And so many of the directives to schools will come directly from the state. That said, one of the things that school districts really need to be continuing to do, and I know this is happening here locally, is to be preparing to modify their operations when they do open up to ensure that they are minimizing the likelihood that the virus will spread within schools, and thinking about how to effectuate social distancing, cleaning requirements, different ways to structure the interactions between students to minimize the spread of the virus. That was one of the things that was most challenging here in our community, was actually even before there was any decision about school closures, there was a lot of struggle on the part of school districts to ensure that they had the ability to pivot their operations to comply with some of the directions and requirements of public health to minimize the spread of COVID-19 within schools. And so I know that a lot of planning and energy and thought has been going into that, while they're also trying to support distance learning to the best of their abilities. And so that planning is very much happening, and we're working in conjunction with the state to ensure that locally we're in the best position possible to support our school districts once they're in a position to reopen. And specifically to your question about this summer, there's also attention to planning for any possible operation of summer school or programs for children that may be possible even before the next school year begins. But of course, we don't yet know whether that can take place.
Ms. Hansen, before we go on to the next question, let me ask sort of a bottom line question on this subject, if I may, which is, if an individual school district is facing the question of whether or not they're going to open or close, who gets to make that decision? So if it's the San Jose School District or the Fremont Union High School District or the Mountain View Wiseman School District, does the individual district make the decision? Does the County Office of Education make the decision? Or is that a decision that's made by our public health officer here at the county, even though she is, one would argue, separate and apart from the public education system?
The public health officer locally or at the state level can order schools closed. However, if the public health officers are allowing schools to reopen, then it would be the individual district that would make the determination whether they're ready to reopen, particularly ready given what we expect will be some of the protocols and requirements that will be put in place. However, here locally, all the districts have really been working in close coordination and collaboration through the County Office of Ed. So not that decisions are made at that level, but there's significant coordination and attempts to be unified and aligned in their action at the county level.
Got it. And I just want to make sure I got that right. So there could be an order from a public health officer, state or local. If not, then that's a local decision for a local governing board to make. But our local governing boards are working collaboratively to try and make sure that they're all more or less on the same page. Have I got that right?
Exactly right.
All right. Thank you. You're a good explainer. Much appreciated. We have Vicki from San Jose. Vicki from San Jose with a question about dentists, I believe. Vicki, are you on the line?
I am. How are you? Thank you for being there for us.
Thank you. What is your question today, Vicki?
I wondered, with general dentists, they're considered, you know, primary care providers. They do use PPE. We haven't heard, you know, dentists that we know of come down with the coronavirus, and they've been using PPE since the AIDS pandemic or epidemic years ago. Wondering, you know, are they able to practice more? I know they're seeing people for emergencies only. You know, if you have a cavity and it's not addressed, of course, you know, your tooth health can become worse.
Right,
and, you know, what's any
Greta,
insight?
Let me turn to Greta Hansen first as someone who is responsible for helping to interpret the public health order and this question of essential businesses and essential employees comes up quite a bit. Ms. Hansen, If you're a dentist in Santa Clara County, what's your status? And perhaps from a public standpoint, if you need to go to the dentist, want to go to the dentist, and I never thought I'd hear the phrase want to go to the dentist, but if you need to go to the dentist or want to go to the dentist, is that something that's possible given the current order in place?
Happy to answer that question. So all healthcare providers, including dentists, are considered essential under the order and are allowed under the order to continue operating. That said, as Paul Lorenz mentioned, many healthcare providers, and including many dentists, have decided on their own to cease elective procedures and visits to minimize the potential of spread in healthcare environments, either to healthcare providers or to patients. And so many dental offices throughout the community have decided to close temporarily, but many of them also remain open for emergency dental procedures, and we expect that some will be making decisions about whether to reopen for standard dental cleanings in the weeks to come. And I believe there are some dental offices that have decided to remain open because they are allowed to do so under the order.
All right. Thanks so much. Let me go to another question from San Jose, and that's Andrew in San Jose. Andrew in San Jose, who I believe Mr. Lorenz has a question for you. So, Andrew, are you still with us?
I am indeed.
Thanks so much for your patience.
No problem. I had two totally unrelated questions, one of which was stirred from somebody else's question, and that is, do you have any records or knowledge or statistics about, is there any COVID-19 transmission happening from takeout food establishments? I mean, is this a – I have a concern about the fear factor in the community, so I'm just curious, is this something that – is a big deal, or is this a can't track it?
So the first question, I'll keep the questioner on the line because I know he has a second question. But Dr. Smith, Ms. Hansen, Paul Lorenz, any data that we can share about takeout food, or has this not been an issue so far?
I suppose I can try to answer that. At this point, we don't have any data to link definitively takeout food to transmission. That being said, you know, we have not been able to complete all the case tracing that needs to be done because of the large number of cases. So I would say we don't have documentation, but we don't have documentation in the other way either.
All right, thank you. So I'm going to say, Andrew, at this point, not an issue that we're aware of, but keeping our eye out for that issue. Your second question, Andrew, was what?
Yeah, the second question is more to do with the fiscal health of the hospital system, and that is in our family we had an elective surgery situation that we deferred. As the curve has flattened, are we in a situation where we're actually keeping people away more than we want to from that? Is this going to be a hardship for the hospital system?
Let me go to Paul Lorenz, who heads up our hospital system. Mr. Lorenz, loud and clear, if you would, please, because you're a little faint on your line. What is the impact of putting off elective surgeries at our hospital, both fiscally for the county and the public, taxpaying public, but then also for folks who were slated to be in our care? Mr. Lorenz, I'll go to you on this one.
Thank you. Great question. And the answer is that just as all hospitals in the county have struggled with this, we too at Valley Medical Center are struggling with it from a financial perspective. What I can share with you is that part of the reason you see the hospitals looking to reopen certain elective surgery is obviously the needs relative to essential health care, but also that the hospitals have capacity. And obviously if we see more patients, it does help the bottom line. Right now, most hospitals in the county are definitely struggling with this. The ability for us to maintain employment for healthcare workers has been, of course, questioned given our financial health. fortunately, at this point in time, we've been able to weather it. Now, whether or not that's sustainable, I think that's going to be a big public policy question for us going forward. So we are looking to, number one, make sure that people have access to these what we consider to be essential healthcare services, and number two, start to rebuild the healthcare system given COVID-19 and the expectation that this is going to go on for quite some time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lorenz. I'm going to go next to a question from Lydia in Palo Alto, and then after that, a question from Julie, who is in Berkeley, but has reached out to us because she indicates she's from KQED and has a question about our system here with respect to the medical examiner. So that question is coming, but first I want to go to Lydia in Palo Alto. Lydia, good morning, and or good afternoon, I should say. Welcome, and thanks for your patience today. What's your question?
The governor had a couple of weeks ago have put out six indicators, critical indicators, to consider before modifying the stay-at-home order. I was wondering if the county might consider using that to put up their numbers on the county website to give us an understanding of where they are at each of those stages so that we can evaluate how the county is doing since we only know what our city, how our city is progressing. That was all, not a question.
Thanks for the question. And let me just go to Greta Hansen and then Dr. Smith, if you'd like. I think the questioner is asking simply enough, if we have six indicators from the state, is it possible we could match our data to those indicators and use that as a way to communicate with the public sort of how we're doing as we make our way through this time? Ms. Hansen, thoughts about that, if any?
Happy to speak to that. And the answer is yes. We are already publishing data on many of those indicators on our website. One of the most significant efforts in our Emergency Operations Center is developing a really rich data dashboard, which has now been emulated by a lot of other counties around the state. And many of the data points on that dashboard speak exactly to the governor's identified indicators. We are anticipating that the state will be providing greater granularity on exactly how those indicators will be tracked at the state level, and absolutely are thinking about how to align as much as possible our tracking of those indicators. We are also assessing locally through our health officer additional indicators and points of information that are critical to assess the trajectory of COVID-19 in our community and what steps we need to take to ensure that as we move very gradually and thoughtfully towards reopening, that we're tracking all the metrics necessary to ensure that we're mitigating to the extent we can some of the negative effects of resurgence and seeing that as early as possible, given the challenge of the pace at which this virus moves from exposure to serious illness, that creates some just natural delays in some of those metrics.
Thanks so much. Julie from Berkeley, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for taking my questions.
Of course. And so Julie, do I understand you're a member of the press?
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm with KQED.
Wonderful. What's your question today?
So I have three questions. I'm hoping you're feeling generous with your time, but let me start off by
I'm afraid I'm not, Julie, able to. I mean, I'm feeling generous, but I just don't have the time to give. So let me ask you to pick the one question that you want to ask so we can make sure to get it in. Go right ahead.
Okay. So the county's medical examiner is said to have written a letter to the Board of Supervisors about 29 people who died of flu-like symptoms. 9 of them tested positive for the coronavirus. Just to get a sense of the timeline here, generally speaking, when did those individuals die?
Let me turn to Dr. Smith and see if he can respond to that question.
Yes, those individuals died during the March-April period. And they're included in our dashboard on the
count. And if you, as a member of the press, would want to have a copy of that letter, you can request that from me, and we'll send it to you.
Julie, I think we've gone on to the next questioner, but if you can hear the sound of my voice, this is Supervisor Joe Simidian. Why don't we get you that information through the county executive's office, and if there's any difficulty in getting the information, please feel free to ask my office to assist you as well. Thank you for that question. We're going to try and squeeze in just one more question before we wrap it up, and that question is coming from Cynthia in Mountain View. Cynthia, are you there? And if Cynthia in Mountain View is not able to... Ah, there is Cynthia in Mountain View. Go right ahead.
I'm here, yes. I've just noticed a huge gap in our response to the virus, and it's really troubling. How do we get people who don't drive to drive-in test sites? I was one of those people who couldn't drive for a while. My car was in the shop. I live alone. I didn't want to endanger a friend. I called 8, 10, 12 public agencies, and nobody would offer me a ride. So I think, and I'm educated and all of that. I know how to research, and I'm able-bodied, and I'm a native speaker. So I'm wondering about all the people who are not, and how in the world can we help them?
Thanks for your question. Anyone on the line able to, from our team here at the county, able to respond to that question today?
So, Supervisor Smith.
Dr. Smith, thoughts?
I think Paul is going to mention that we don't have to go to drive-in sites in order to get the test. We have the test available in basically all of our clinics. Those are the county clinics. There, the test is also available through your private healthcare system if you are not insured with the county or you're not part of the county system. So Kaiser has the test. The test is also paid for by other third-party payers. So the drive-in areas are not required. In terms of the question of whether you can't find a location where you'd like to get testing, you can go to our website and get more information from the frequently asked questions or from calling 211, and they will give you information about how you can get transport to locations that you need.
Thank you so very much. What I want to do, Cynthia, is offer up my office as well. Please feel free to call or email my office, County Supervisor Joe Simidian. And I don't have a good answer for you off the top of my head, but our staff will work to see if we can find something better than what you're confronting right now. So obviously can't know for sure what we will or won't find, but we're certainly happy to try and help if you give our office a call or shoot us an email. At this point, we're closing in on the hour and a half mark. Folks, you've been very patient, very committed. Thank you all so much. I should begin the closeout here by thanking Dr. Jeff Smith and Ms. Greta Hansen and Mr. Paul Lorenz, all for joining us in the discussion today. Really helpful information, and appreciate sharing a big chunk of your Sunday with us. I also want to let you know that we will have at least one more telephone town hall like this one scheduled in the weeks ahead to help keep folks informed about COVID-19 here in Santa Clara County. That next call is scheduled for Sunday, May the 17th, 3 weeks from today. So we'll be reaching out, but if you would like to join us again and want to plan ahead a little bit, Sunday, May the 17th is the date. As I mentioned earlier, if there is any part of the call that you missed or would simply like to listen to again, or if you know someone who wasn't able to join us and you think they might be interested in hearing the conversation, people should be able to find that on my webpage. That's County Supervisor Joe Simidian. Our office's webpage will be updated within the next couple of days to make the conversation available, as well as the first one, if you are really anxious to hear any of that information as well. I do want to say that after we wrap this up in a minute. If you'd like to leave a comment or a message or simply let us know what you'd like us to cover in our next telephone town hall, if you stay on the line after this call has ended, listen for a tone. You can leave a message, but candidly would appreciate any constructive criticism you want to make about how we use this tool to keep folks informed, issues, as I say, that you think we should cover next time out. And I want to close today in a slightly different way, and that is by sharing a portion of a piece I read in the San Francisco Chronicle last Sunday on April the 19th by Dr. Richard Wang from San Francisco. And Dr. Wang is an assistant professor of medicine at UCSF. He's an attending intensivist at UCSF Medical Center, San Francisco General Hospital, and the San Francisco Veterans Affairs Medical Center. And he wrote a piece really directed primarily at folks living in San Francisco, but I thought it was broadly applicable and so well spoken that I wanted to share it as a way to close today. He writes, and again, this is Dr. Richard Wang in the Chronicle, "Much is being written about how our area has flattened the curve. Undoubtedly, there is an element of luck. Certainly, bold and courageous decisions by our elected leaders have made a decision. But the most important person in this communal team effort? You. I write this missive," says Dr. Wang, "I write this missive to express my deep and abiding gratitude. Many of you are suffering the consequences of the massive economic downturn. Others of you continue to staff our essential businesses, grocery stores, gas stations, nursing homes, with bravery and calm and grace. Over our ubiquitous masks, everyone has had to learn how to smize. That means smile with our eyes. Everyone has had to endure the exquisite anxiety of not knowing exactly where we might find our next roll of toilet paper. In your moments of frustration, sadness, anger, and despair, I hope you will remember this. From his point of view in the intensive care unit, your daily sacrifice has literally saved lives, especially among the elderly, the frail, and the chronically ill. These saved lives are counted in the number of people who never come to the intensive care unit in the first place because they were never infected, because the chain of transmission was broken by the humble, heroic acts of social distancing and sheltering in place. We will soon enter a new phase of the crisis. In some ways, what comes next may be even harder than what came before. Life may stutter and syncopate. We may take two steps forward only to take one step back. And yet, in this community that has played an outsized role in the public health history of the United States, I am confident," writes Dr. Wang, "confident that we will do the right thing. I could not be prouder to serve you," he writes, "and stand alongside you. We will come out of this together stronger than ever." Well said, better than I could have said it, which is why I chose to share Dr. Richard Wang's words today. Please be well, enjoy the remainder of your weekend, and we hope you'll join us again in 3 weeks. Thank you all so much, and have a good day.